G'day everyone, and welcome to Yarns from the Paddock, brought to you by AgForce Queensland. AgForce is a peak organisation representing Queensland rural producers. They exist to ensure the long-term growth, viability, competitiveness and profitability of broadacre industries of cattle, grain, cane, sheep and wool in Queensland. Now, we have a cracker of a guest for you today. Today, we're chatting to Paul McIntosh. Now, as you would guess, the title of this episode is Macca's Musing, a focus on weeds. And that's exactly what we're going to do today. Now, Paul has recently attended the GRDC update down at Gundawindi. And throughout this conversation, we're going to touch on some of the key takeaways that he learned at that update about some of the emerging weeds and technologies that are available. And he's also going to share with us some of the hot topics right now in the space of weeds, pests and diseases. So, whether you're in a car, whether you're in an office or maybe sitting on a bike, this episode is for you. Hope you enjoy it. Thank you very much for jumping on the Yarns from the Paddock podcast. Just to kick us off, and for those that don't know you, who are you and what do you do?
Good afternoon, Sam. My name's Paul McIntosh, everybody, and born in the South Burnett many, many years ago, in fact, many, many decades ago. And I've been in a farming family way back in then. And, of course, then this career called agronomy turned up, and away I went back in 1979 May after I decided not to go to England and play cricket. So there was an opportunity there to go to England, and there was an opportunity to work here in Australian agronomy, and I chose the latter, and here I am talking to you, Sam.
I tell you what, Paul, yeah, you're not missing a thing. Don't worry about that cricket career, but it definitely sounds like another podcast that could definitely get you on for a yarn. But Paul, what is your role at Pulse Australia?
I've got two roles. I've got two organisations that I work for. I've got work for WeedSmart, which is based at the University of WA, which is the practical voice of weed control in Australia. And of course, I handle the northern region, which starts somewhere down wherever Greg Condon doesn't want to stops around Gunnedah, and it works right up to the top of Queensland for the WeedSmart thing. Pulse Australia role is much the same, except with same sort of area, so it's a pretty big country, and I look after all the just a whole heap of issues with growing our pulse crops. Sam, it could be agronomy, it could be a bit of marketing info, it could be a whole range of things. So they're two very well-known and well-respected industry positions, and I have those two up here in the northern region.
Paul, it definitely sounds like you're the man to talk to about this topic. And today we are focusing on weeds. And look, you've recently been at the GRDC update at Gundawindi. What were your main takeaways from that event? And what about the new things that are coming up, the emerging weeds and technologies to help fight them?
Oh, look, Michael Walsh did a great talk down there last week. Michael's been around the countryside a bit and worked in the US as well as a researcher. And he's talking about different mechanisms of weed control. It's blue sky stuff at the present moment and happening. So he was one of the major forces in developing the weed chipper, which had a optical camera on it, Sam. And jeez, when it spied a weed, it came down with a tine and chipped the weed out. So that process was what Michael was a big part of way back 5-6 years ago. And, of course, he's just gone on to them about more different techniques about discovering weed and controlling a weed besides using herbicides that we've so used to in the past, the last 50 or 60 years. So he did a good talk, just some of the things. It's all talk about controlling weeds and talks about harvest weed seed control. They're using the header as a device for controlling those weed seeds that we get in our paddock. Wouldn't say it's caught on big time over here in the north, but Michael was a big part of that whole role of harvest weed seed control as well. So he was a good talker. And then we got Michael Witterick and Bhagwat Chauhan, both great weed researchers. Sonny Bhagwat Chauhan, that is, worked at Gatton at Quaffey down there, and Michael Witterick is a long-term, very well-regarded weed researcher based here at DAF. And they did a dual talk about the resistance levels and how things are happening with those resistance levels with our weeds. And, of course, with my other role, Sam, I can really transfer that weed resistant to insect resistant and fungicide or disease resistant too. So that's a big thing. So after that, we had Peter McKenzie and Tim Poole, private agros from down in New South Wales, and they did a great session on some of the practical things that they find about weed control. And I did say to my Weed Smart people, just like listening to Paul McIntosh doing his Weed Smart Big Six with Wade Peter and Sam sorry, Peter and Tim loaned it out. It was a great talk. So that weed section was really well populated, Sam, and it was highly regarded, and people went away with a lot new ideas for the future and cast some thoughts about what they're doing in the future.
Jeez, it sounds like a bit of an action pack. Was it a couple of days or just a day? How many days was it, Paul?
Oh, Sam, it was great. The GRDC updates are very well regarded, organised by John Cameron from ICANN in Gundawindi every year for 2 days. Started off about greenhouse gases, and I thought that was terribly, terribly interesting. I had a couple of good speakers there in, I'll just get the name for you. Aaron Simmons was excellent. And then we had a bloke called Rob Norton. Both of those gentlemen in the plenary section, so the whole group, gave us about greenhouse gases and how we need to be prepared about having greenhouse gases being part of our workplace, our work style in the northern region. And it was really, really eye-opening. And we certainly haven't gotten all the answers yet about making greenhouse gases less of a concern. And of course, we know about Europe, they're gone right into that stuff and they want our crops to be greenhouse gas friendly, Sam. Well, these gentlemen suggested that we all get organised and get involved with greenhouse gases and know what our greenhouse gas emissions are, know what our carbon footprints like that. And that's the first time I've really sort of taken a good lot of notice of those talks. They were excellent fellas down there, and we've got their papers, and it's really interesting about greenhouse gases and where we might go in the future.
So, Paul, taking a step back, what are the key topics right now in the weeds, pests and diseases space, and what management insights do you have?
Glad you asked that, Sam. I thought feather-type roads and weeds like that, particularly tall fleabane, were going to be another number one crunch problem the summer of 2023-24, but nut, they got pipped by an insect called fall armyworm. And the fall armyworm came in here. Why it ever left America, I'll never ever know, but anyhow, so it wended its way across through Europe, down the Africas, through the Asias to Australia. And fall armyworm has been a real problem in central Queensland and southern Queensland, a little bit in northern New South Wales this last 6 months, 5 months over the summer. It was really hoeing into our maize. It really tore into our grain sorghum, and it really decimated our millet crops. So that was one of the major talking points there. Melina Miles from DAF and Tumahe did a great talk, Dr. Melina Miles, about them. And, of course, we have practical people around the ridges who did webinars and that stuff on fall armyworm and what we can do to control them and all that sort of stuff, and how we go about assessing our numbers of fall armyworm in the plants better, and also having some research about says what sort of damage they can do when they take a lot of these leaves off the sorghum plant and the maize plant. So that was a really good session down there too. So it was chock full of good sessions and a few concurrent sessions, Sam. You want to be in both, but you can't. And of course, you had Mike Bell and BDO Mar and that crew. Paul Gardol was there somewhere talking about nutrition, and it's never a conference without a nutrition talk, is it? And, of course, thinking about greenhouse gases, and we talk about reducing greenhouse gases by maybe making our nitrogen more effective. And so instead of getting 30 and 40 and 50% efficacy, getting it up to 70 and 80 and 90% efficacy, and that's huge. And that's what would be nice to be able to get that in some of these sugarcane areas on the coastal region too. And that would be a big thing for them if they can get that increase in that efficacy of nitrogen into their sugarcane plant.
So touching on some of those management insights, what are some of those takeaways that producers can use in regards to the fall armyworm and utilising nitrogen?
Fall armyworm, they're not going to go away. They don't like mung beans, I might say, and they don't like soybeans, which is a great news for me, except for one errant moth that laid a couple of eggs in a mung bean crop, according to my friend Roger Lindemann up in central Queensland. But certainly vigilance. And maybe you change your planting date, Sam, was one of the things that's coming. We know that they don't particularly like temperatures under 30 degrees or thereabouts, but they can still go ahead. But so it might encourage people to plant more in the early spring, like the boys have been saying, Joe Eyre and those guys have been saying, plant it down 11, 12 degrees of grain sorghum. That might be one issue, get it in earlier before those fall armyworms really crank up, because the later plant, this plant that we did in December, when all the rain started to occur, Sam, the plant we did then was pretty large, and it just seemed to suit those hot, muggy days. The fall armyworm just proliferated everywhere, and we had some horrendous stories and visuals and photos of maize crops and millet crops just being absolutely decimated, and grain sorghum wasn't just too far behind. And contrary to our belief before, where grain sorghum wasn't going to be hit too hard by fall armyworm. It is now. The gloves are off. We're all very much aware of it. There's plenty of research going on about it, and there's plenty of soul searching over the summer to discuss other tactics, how we're going to get our control of fall armyworm in our crops.
And in relation to nitrogen, what were some of the takeaways there for management insights?
Oh, look, you hear Mike and you hear Bede and all those fellows and Dave Lester, who know lots about nitrogen. I'm not sure we've got any great answers. We know that we can lose nitrogen out the top. We know we can lose nitrogen through the thing. Trying to get your nitrogen on before the rain pushes it down to the profile is a big thing. So it's not an easy sort of thing. As I talk to Mike quite a bit and ask him about nitrogen and where we put it, you can go a few different ways, but efficacy is a big thing. So you need that nitrogen with moisture in the root zone. It's as simple as that. But you've got to get it there. And, of course, the water fronts that go down through the soil, Sam, they'll take the nitrogen, but they're quite a deal behind. So if the wetting front's at 10 inches, the nitrogen front might be at 5 or 6 sort of stuff. So trying to get it down into those root zones where the roots will be for those future crops is a bit of a trick. And then efficacy is just another thing. It moves with water, and roots haven't got noses. So the roots can't smell nitrogen, they can't smell phosphorus, they can't smell potassium, or any of those nutrients. So you've got to place your nitrogen deep enough with moisture so those roots intercept it. And apart from that, you've got all the plant issues where it's not very efficient of using nitrogen anyhow. So you've got all those things too. So there's a fair few issues there. I wouldn't say we've got the answer totally, but certainly every year we talk about it, we get a little bit better in our management of our nitrogen applications, and hopefully our effects of nitrogen management being better, we get a better yield for more efficient nitrogen use.
Switching gears a bit, but in the R&D space, what are some of the major gaps that you see?
Oh, well, major gaps.
Big question.
Big question is, mate, we've got plenty of gaps. It's just, if you spend $10 million, is it going to give you a return? Is it going to be something blue sky sort of stuff? So there's plenty of gaps there. I still think our nutrition needs more time in it, especially our soils with got constraints, like there's too much sodium or too much chloride or any of those things there. We still need to be dry. There's a lot of research done, Sam, but of course adoption is the other side of the coin, isn't it? Mike Bell's talked about deep P and deep K, and he's got some tremendous results, him and Dave Lester and the team around the countryside. But trying to get people to do that when it makes a hell of a mess of your soil profile, because you're trying to put this stuff down 8 or 10 inches in the soil. And of course, we love our soils, beautiful, untilled stuff because of the zero till thing. And you've got moisture down there. You go down that deep and make a heck of a mess of the whole thing, putting deep placement of P and K down there, but leave your soil absolute mess that moisture flies out of the soil with evaporation, and you can't get a planter in there for 2 years until it all flattens out. So it's a bit of juggling, isn't it? Like that whole thing about nitrogen and phosphorus and potassium placement in the soil, and having your fallow periods be good enough that you can go in and plant when you want to plant when the moisture's right. So there's a fair bit in it. I wouldn't say we've got the answers. Sometimes it's a bit of luck. Other times it's a bloody mess, and you think, why did I ever do that? But certainly that use of those immobile nitrogen elements like potassium and phosphorus from down deep is going. That mining of those two particular products down deep is going on. We need to think about how we're going to replace those elements down in those deeper parts of the soil without making a bloody mess of the whole paddock.
Paul, how do you think the Queensland government could better support our growers with crop protection, including research and development?
Mate, for a long time we've known DAF are going backwards. You know, we've had a real issue with our DAF researchers and all that stuff going backwards. And you know, we've just another one of our favourite entomologists just retired sort of stuff. So that's another, you know, one off the team. We've got one good pathologist, plant pathologist, broadacre plant pathologist left in Queensland, from what I can believe. So certainly reinstating some of these really technical positions in our DPI, or our DAF, I should say, would be really, really advantageous, so that at least we've got capacity to respond to an issue. And that's an issue. That's a problem in itself. We only respond to capacity. GRDC does a marvellous job trying to cover all these bases and people that the list as long as you're about, we want to do this, we want to do that, but you know, we really need the state governments to be able to supply staff with the capacity to be able to do those sorts of research things that we need to know about for the future.
Paul, and on a similar topic there, is there anything that the Queensland government could do or the government could do better in biosecurity space to protect the cropping industry?
Oh, I mean, biosecurity is a real tricky one, isn't it? Like, you know, you just got to look. We can't stop fall armyworm. It's as simple as that. They flew in from the north. Can't do that. We need to be prepared how to control the beggars. And is that a BT plant? Is it a BT sorghum plant? Is it a BT corn plant that they have overseas to reduce the impact of those cursed insects? They've got enough insect resistance to them, so we're using these expensive ones. So you can't do much about them. But the ones that, you know, that snuck in, like the parthenium in the buffle grass all those years ago, and some of these other things that we hear about, the fire ants, I don't know about varroa mite, I don't know how that got here, but those sorts of things have an impact on our agriculture. So I suppose it matters, a bit like a boxing term, Sam, keep your jukes up, because that's what's going to have to happen in the future with biosecurity. We cannot lessen the the inputs into Biosecurity Queensland and Biosecurity Australia, for that matter. It's not just us. We're not just a single state. You know, no. Borders are closed. No one can get in. No bad guys. No pests can get in. Certainly, we need to have the Biosecurity Australia also supported by all the states with Queensland Government Biosecurity, that we keep an eye on some of these things that are coming in from somewhere, somehow, that we can keep them out, because it could have immeasurable impacts on our whole agricultural scene.
Now, Paul, I've had a few tongue twisters so far in this interview that from the questions that have been given to me, and here's another one. The APVMA has a number of products under review. Is there anything that particularly stands out to you as being something the industry needs to take action on?
All of them. I've seen a few lists in the APVMA. I guess what we want from the APVMA is some, can I say, common sense with some of these things. Unfortunately, they need to pick up the phone and ring people in the industry, which they may or may not do. There was a bit of a leaving of the AVPMA from very experienced people some years ago when they were moved partly from Canberra up to Armidale, and we lost a lot of good experienced people where you could ring up the phone, Sam, and you could say, this is the issue, this is the product, what issues have we got to be able to get this registered or permitted or emergency use permitted in Australia or something like that. You could have those conversations. Not so easy these days. So that access to AVPMA and giving them some common sense and some help across some products that we really need to keep or we really need to have registered in Australia, like Syngenta's Victraro, which is one for crown rot, got knocked on the head the other day. The AVPMA got to let it go. Now, they haven't got the easiest job in the world, the old AVPMA from the Australian government, but, however, they've really got to have some communication lines to people out in the field, GRDC people and all that sort of stuff, to check with the other people in the field what is going on. What use patterns are we going to use that could get us into jeopardy with some of these products that are being either registered, coming in brand new, or they're a permit from another crop that we're going to extrapolate across to another crop that we're using for the same disease, same pest, but just a different crop. So appreciate they've got a new hard job, but they really need to pick up the phone and ring someone.
Now, Paul, this episode is called Macca's Musing, a bit of a deep dive into weeds, but is there anything else that is on top of your mind that is a bit of an issue that we should be focusing on?
Oh, mate, weeds have always been a problem. Like, you know, I grew up in weedy country in the South Burn a long time ago, and they're still giving us problems, some of those weeds. They're just new names. They're things like feathertop roads. They're things like tall fleabane. They're giving us problems. Now we've got fall armyworm. So you've got two weeds and a painful dome moth stroke grub that's giving us whippo. And I suspect disease resistance is going to happen too. And so all the diseases are a concern, like powdery mildews and all that sort of stuff. And we're running up to this winter where ascochyta and those sorts of diseases are going to be right in the forefront of the whole thing. So what gives me sleepless nights? Nothing really. I'm confident enough that we have the skills and we have the abilities to get over most of these things. I have said in past, Sam, when I do a two-hour talk on pesticide resistance, I have said that when we get really wholesale disease resistance, I'm going to retire. Now, tongue-in-cheek it might have been, but it really does scare me about that. And you know, Pooley's got a big job in FAR about getting us on top of all those things. But weeds, you see a weed that's resistant, you can pull it out, chip it out, or plough it out. You see some insects there, well, you know, that's a bit of a thing, but they have a life cycle, and they will, you know, they'll be up here in 1 minute and they'll be down the bottom next week as far as numbers go. Disease just keeps on going. And if the conditions are right, that disease can just roll on through, Sam, and it can go right through the whole crop for the whole life of the crop. And you just got to look at Ascochyta or Botrytis gromale. They can go right through these chickpea crops like a knife through butter. So am I worried about it? No, but you need to be kept very much on the ball and keep very wary of some of these pests that we've got in here, like weeds, like disease, and like insects.
Paul, I greatly appreciate your time this afternoon. I've just got one more important question. What are your thoughts on Steve Smith opening the batting?
Well, mate, as you know, I'm a cricketer. Steve wanted a change, thought a change up the order might have been good for his thing. He got a 90 the other day, didn't he?
Yeah, he did all right.
He did all right. So I'm prepared to leave him there because it's brought that greeny fella up and he got it. What did he get, 190 in his first or second dig at number five or number four? So I'm happy with it, mate. I guess that young Pekowski down in Victoria, I'm a bit sad to see him get another dong in the head, the poor beggar. And he had a helmet on too. So just it's got to come down to some of the other guys that are around, I suspect, to be a follow-up to Steve Smith and Usman Khawaja. And they need blooding. They'll be in the squad. So I'm happy to leave Steve there with Uzi. Good to see old Marnus getting a few runs occasionally too, but certainly we've still got it with the Kiwis in here, Sam.
It's always we did all right. Look, thank you very much once again, Paul. It's great to get an insight about weeds and also cricket from you. So, look, thank you very much, and you have a cracker of an afternoon.
Yeah, you too, Sam. Thanks very much for that, mate.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of Yarns from the Paddock, brought to you by AgForce Queensland. And if you did, if you could leave us a rating or even throw us a follow, that will greatly help the podcast. And if you're looking to become a member of this great organisation, it's easy. All you have to do is Google AgForce Queensland, click on the membership section, and there you'll find out all the information that is needed to join AgForce. I hope you guys have a great day. Cheers.